Disclaimer. The views and opinions expressed on Nerdtalk do not reflect those of Anime Herald. Due to strong language, listener discretion is advised. Now sit back and enjoy the show. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, fans of all ages. It's time for Nerdtalk, the only podcast that knows the difference between a blog and a blunder. I'm Mike Ferreira, and I'm joined by Matt Brown, Anthony Simpson, and special guest host, Lauren Orsini of Otaku Journalist.
Hello.
Yo.
Hi, everybody. What is the difference between a blog and a blunder?
You know, after 14 years, I'm still asking that question.
Can it be both?
It can be both. Lauren is, on top of being the proprietress of Otaku Journalist, she helms Gunpla 101, and she's been featured in numerous publications, including CNN, The Daily Dot, and Anime News Network. So, before we begin, why don't you tell us a bit more about yourself, Lauren?
Sure thing. Hello, Anime Herald fans. I'm Lauren Orsini. I call myself an otaku journalist, which to me means a journalist who uses my geeky passions in order to make my reporting more interesting and more informative. So I've written about Otakon for Otaku USA. I've written about Homestuck for CNN. I wrote about furries for Forbes. Right now, I've been writing about technology for ReadWrite. And as my editor says, I take things that everyone else finds boring and make them interesting with sheer enthusiasm. I'm here because I just published a book, and I'm doing that, you know, that promotion you got to do after you write a book. The work is not even close to over. Obligatory was the word I was looking for.
The bell's just begun for you.
That's right.
All right, well, before we begin, I want to just say thank you for coming to the show. It's a pleasure.
And I want to say thank you for having me. What perfect timing. I just put out a book on the 1st of May. Today's May 2nd.
Definitely the gods of scheduling have aligned.
Mm-hmm. And it's almost a month after we first met in person. On April 2nd, I think. I think that was April 2nd or April 3rd that we met for the first time in person.
Oh my god, it really is.
Yeah, Anime Boston. Wow. We like to be punctual around here.
We do. We got a schedule and we stick to it, even if we don't know about it, damn it. So, before we get rolling, I'd like to bring us out at the beginning of each show. Basically, what are you watching? What are two shows that you're watching right now that you'd like everyone to talk about?
Well, I'm going to just talk about the two ones that I talked about last time. My Love Story, which is still my favorite, and then my favorite in just a fun way, Show by Rock.
I love My Love Story.
Yeah, go ahead, sorry.
No, it's just perfect. It's like, here's a tree that looks like a butt. Anyway, what kind of girls are you into? The dialogue's fantastic. Can I just tell you everything instead of us, like, running around in circles, having missed connections for multiple episodes? Suna is a treasure.
Yeah, I'm really, really loving that show.
Yeah, I like the run around in circles comment. Wasn't that like the entire premise of School Rumble, which I actually loved that, but they made a joke about that whole, you know, churn.
Yeah, I said if Takeo doesn't get a clue by episode 3, I'm just dropping this show. I don't want it to be like Kimi ni Todoki, where we're like wondering the whole time if he likes me, where it's obvious that he likes you. And just not progressing at all. And then season 2, forgetting somehow that he likes you and having to do it all over again. Did anyone else watch Kimi ni Todoki?
I did not.
I did. You can tell they were like, crap, we got approved for a second season. How do we do this?
Just do it again. I really like that, that My Love Story is like ignoring a lot of the tropes we're really sick of. And giving us some unconventional characters and keeping the good parts of shoujo and then experimenting with some new stuff, too. How's Show by Rock?
Well, it's kind of one of those. It's really cheesy. It's like super corny and it's kind of crazy, but I mean, it's not well written, but I enjoy it for what it's worth.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a show that's proven to me that anime needs more animal boys. Because there's like there's a whole bunch of like the cast is mostly female, but the one band is like a visual K. There's like two male bands, and one of them is like a visual K band, and they're all like Bishonen who are all like animal boys. And I just after I'm seeing that, I'm like, man, we need more animal boys in anime.
What is this proof?
Well,
I mean, no one else... I wouldn't say it's like well written, but it's just fun. I find it fun.
Well, if no one else is going to go next, two things I'm watching are Gunslinger Stratus, which I don't know. I'm in it for the long haul. I'm reviewing it for Anime News Network. You know, it's again a Urobuchi show, and I thought it could go either way. It's not going the way I wanted it to go. But it's poorly executed with a really cool premise of doppelgangers. Like, what do you do when you meet your doppelganger? How do you get an advantage over your doppelganger if you guys are going to fight? If you're in love with some guy, are you also in love with that guy's doppelganger? These are the deep questions. And I just really hope we get around to answering them.
You are a stronger person than I to watch that. You really are.
Yeah, I just wish the animation would get better. But it's probably just going to get worse, you know? If I know anything from Shiro Bako.
Yeah, this might be the Pooty Pooty Heaven. How about you, Matt?
I'm actually not watching more than two shows right now, which is kind of sad. But I've talked about Fate Stay Night and how it's really kept me hooked and how I've enjoyed pretty much every minute of it since it started. UFO Table's doing a great job, yada yada yada. The show that I haven't talked about yet and I've just recently found that I really like is Food Wars. Other than just saying it's really funny, it's hard to capture exactly. I mean, it's a shonen show. They're just lining up a whole bunch of challenges for the main character, whose name is Soma, to knock down. But you know, just like with any shows like this, the way they do it, and the kind of sense of humor it has, I'm really enjoying it. Mike, what was the show that you said, Gourmet Girl Graffiti? There's a little bit of similarity with that. Like, each episode is like someone makes this dish and like wows a bunch of people. And the reactions to the food as they're tasting it, especially when women are tasting it, is priceless.
I'm glad they did that. I remember watching Toriko and it being like an orgasm every time they eat, and I'm glad they just took that to its natural conclusion.
Oh yeah, definitely. And they had a lot of fun with that too, like just seeing how creative they could get with the reactions.
It's just so over the top. I love it.
And was there another show that you're watching, Lauren?
I'm also watching Ore Monogatari. I'm also watching. Yeah, I'm watching so many shows. We let's not get into them all.
I hear you. I do.
Sorry, I meant My Love Story when I said Ore Monogatari. I don't know why I'm being pretentious and saying the Japanese name for it. Except I guess that's what I heard first.
I do that sometimes. There's a limit to number of syllables in the title where, if it's higher than a certain amount, I just won't do it. I know I can't say it.
And on my end, it's, aside from the shows that we just discussed last week, Danmachi, which, as we all know, the less said, the better. I'm also watching the second season of I Can't Understand What My Husband Is Saying, which, still delightful, still wonderful.
I love that. I always say to my husband, this is our life, except I'm the husband. But I literally work from home and am a web designer sometimes. And just really into anime. I mean, he is too, but he likes the old school stuff. He's watching Through Macross 7. I'm watching what's airing now. I don't know who has it better, actually, sometimes.
Six of one, half done the other, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I liked how the show... I like how Kaoru, the wife in the show, always winds up being, like, the subject of her husband's fantasies, and he or she doesn't even understand his reactions, it seems like. It's great, just the way they set it up.
Yeah, it's a clever little show.
It really is.
What was Don Machi again? Was that the dungeon thing?
Yeah, is it wrong to pick up girls?
Yeah.
I definitely had a few words to say about that last time.
So did I. Mostly about Hestia. But...
Oh, man. When an episode goes live, they're going to firebomb my house.
Don't worry, they're going to target me too.
All right.
I mean, hey, like I said, hey, I yell against Hestia. Sound like an old man yelling, get off my lawn, so I'm sure my house will be firebombed too.
Fair enough. All right, as we mentioned earlier, Lauren released a new book, Build Your Anime Blog, How to Get Started, Stand Out, and Make Money Writing About What You Love. Lauren, why don't you tell us a bit about the book and what led you to start writing it?
Well, I'm a writer, and I'm also, I'm a reader first. So when I set out to write my own, to start a blog, I was reading, you know, all the big sites and some of the books that these people wrote, you know, like Darren Rose of ProBlogger.net. He has a book on blogging. I read Gary Vaynerchuk's book, which had a lot about blogging in it. And they all say, like, blog about what you're passionate about and your audience will come. And I'm like, I was just so skeptical. I'm like, I'm passionate about cartoons from Japan. Is anyone going to actually take me seriously? Am I going to be able to create a career as a writer while doing stuff like this? And I guess fast forward about 6 years, I have managed to do that. And not just me, but I've discovered that a lot of people have been able to blog about anime and have successful blogs with lots of readers and people who are really engaged, and they even get opportunities based on that, like writing for Otaku USA or Anime News Network, or making money off of affiliate links through Amazon or through Write Stuff, may their affiliate program rest in peace. But I kept hearing about all these success stories, and I thought, and I thought I'd like to write a book on this, but I don't know if anyone even cares. So I did a poll for my readers, because as soon as I wrote Otaku Journalism, I was like, oh, I want to write another book now. And I said, if I wrote a book about one of these five things, which one would you be most likely to buy? And by a long shot, it was a book about anime blogging. So I'm like, okay, people care. But I'm not the end-all be-all on anime blogging. So I'm going to find 12 other people who are also amazing anime bloggers. And I didn't want that to be my decision either. You see a pattern here. So I asked my readers once again, who are some bloggers you enjoy reading? What are some blogs? And I'll interview the people who get results in this poll. So... they listed a bunch of people, including Mike of Anime Herald. I noticed that, like, a lot of these people are blogs I read and people who I am friends with. And I think it's because I mention them on my blog a lot and they mention me on their blog. So we have a lot of reader overlap. And that's why it turned out that way. But anyway, that was 2 months ago that I decided to do this. And so I scheduled 12 interviews as soon as I could. And just started hammering out this book. I learned from my friend Nathan Minmay, and by saying that, I have to give you a link to how to actually spell his name, because it is not spelled the way I just said it at all. But he writes, he can write a Kindle book in like 2 weeks and just put it out. What's great about Kindle publishing is it's just so easy. And you don't have to worry about working with a publisher. You just need to know some HTML so you can format it and put it up there and make sure there's no typos or any errors. So you can really just come up with an idea for something cool and put it out really quickly. So that's how I was able to come up with an idea 2 months ago and put out a book yesterday. And that's the story of Build Your Anime Blog.
Very cool, very cool. And I couldn't help noticing you mentioned a couple of fairly prominent names, particularly Darren Rose and Gary Vaynerchuk, or Gary V, as a lot of them know. And I noticed that in your book, there are definitely some callbacks to their style of writing. Do you feel that their overall tone, their style, and even their content were an influence when writing this up?
It's been years. It's been 5 years, actually, since I last read either of their books, because I was reading them, like, right after I started Otaku Journalist. But I guess since then, it has continued to influence my writing. I guess as a journalist, one of the things I'm proudest of about my writing is that I can, like, mimic a style. In order to write for different places, editors want my writing to conform a certain way. I am really a big proponent of developing your own voice. But I guess if you're going to borrow style from people, it's best to learn from the best. So I wasn't really directly thinking, okay, I'm going to channel Darren Rose and Gary Vaynerchuk with this. But, I mean, they did write very good books on blogging, so I'm glad that my book reminds you of theirs.
I could definitely see the influence there, so yeah. I know you mentioned that you crowdsource a lot of what went on, like from the topic to the actual interviewees. Was there anyone that you want to really speak with that you didn't get the chance to, either the stars didn't align or it wasn't something that the readers wanted to see?
Yeah, I really wanted to talk to Emily Rand, also known as AJ the Fourth. But we couldn't get a time to talk to each other within my limited window. She writes for her personal blog is For Me in Full Bloom, so we'll just put it at that. And I also wanted to talk to Ogue Maniacs, but that didn't work out either. So actually, and I mean, all the time I'm discovering new bloggers that I wish I could have included in the book. So maybe I'll have to, like, put out a second edition with, like, 12 more. There's just so many amazing bloggers out there, and I learned so much, even though I've been blogging for years, just talking to them. It was such a learning experience for me. Yeah, one of my big regrets about the book is there are not very many women in it. There were 3 women interviewed. Everyone else is a guy. I didn't get any non-binary people. And you'd think that since I'm a woman, it would have been easier to find female anime bloggers, but it just didn't work out that way. And I wanted to make sure that... I mean, that was a secondary goal. And firstly, I wanted to get the bloggers that my readers were interested in and the bloggers who deserved it and who had merit.
I'm kind of with you on that one. I can't really think of too many. I'll say it this way. I think the female bloggers whom I read a lot still and respect are all in like the manga sphere.
And a lot of female anime bloggers are in like group blogs, and I really tried to stay away from, like, well, if I did group blogs, I only talked to the founder. I mean, yeah, that was my biggest regret about the book. Yeah, buy my book. Here's my biggest regret.
Well, since you just said your biggest regret, what would you say is the one thing that you're, like, really proud of with the book,
I'm really proud of how quickly I put it together. It's just, I had to transcribe all these interviews by hand. I didn't use Mechanical Turk or anything like that. So I would talk to somebody on Skype. And, well, I'd give the blogger some questions in advance so they could really think them over. Then we'd set up a Skype date. I'd ask them all the questions while recording it in GarageBand as a podcast on my Mac. Then, before I did the next one, just to keep it fresh in my mind, I would listen to that again. And if the recording was 45 minutes, it would take me double that to transcribe it. And so I would just be sitting there trying to write it up. And then I would give that back to the blogger to be like, do you see anything that you think you didn't say or that you'd like to reword? And that was definitely the most labor-intensive part of the book. And I'm just really proud of myself for not losing steam halfway through or getting unmotivated and just kind of getting that out, because I think that's the most valuable part. I mean, my advice is 1/4 of the book. 25% is just me being like, oh, well, this is how it worked for me and this is what I do. But it's not like this for everyone. And I think the other 3/4 of the book really drive that home. And if I hadn't done 12 different interviews, I don't think the book would be half as useful to people as it is.
One of the things that I see really often in how to blog materials, and I believe your book says it too, is how you want to choose like as narrow a topic as possible, and you don't really want to venture outside of it. I noticed that you also talk a little bit about your primary blog is Otaku Journalist, and then you develop this other interest in doing Gundam models, and now you have a blog about that. At what point, when you have competing interests like that, do you choose to split apart your publications for those?
Yeah, this is a really fascinating subject, and one I'm really interested in. You'll see a lot of it in the interview I did with Charles of Beneath the Tangles, because both he and I have done the not very recommended thing of combining two niches into one blog. Mine is anime and journalism, his is anime and Christianity. And neither of them are things where people are like, oh yeah, those two totally go together. So we've always really connected on that point. And for me, those niches seem extremely narrow, but for me there's a lot I can talk about within that. What I say in the book is that a blog is never going to capture your entire personality. You are a person who is very complicated with many facets. You are amazing. Don't try to squeeze that all into a blog. It'll never happen. So you just need to think about what are some things that I want to surface that I think readers will be very interested in. The thing that happened with Gunpla 101 isn't that it became such a huge interest of mine that I'm like, I must start a new blog where I can write about this all the time and nothing else. What really happened was that I had been writing about Gunpla occasionally on Otaku Journalist, and those posts were getting tons of hits, and the affiliate links in them were performing extremely well, like hundreds of dollars a month. And I said, okay, this needs to be its own thing. This is a business now. And so really that's what happened with Gunpla 101. It's not that I'm just deeply passionate about Gundams. I mean, I do like them a lot. And I mean, what I'm passionate about involving Gundams is that people are really pretentious about them sometimes. I've seen blogs that are just making fun of beginners Gunpla models and like being like, oh, look at this crap. And I think that Gunpla is for everyone. So that's really the thing I'm most passionate about when it comes to that blog. But what it was about was it wasn't thinking about my personality. It was thinking about the readers and what would best serve my readers, especially the ones who are just really into Gunpla 101, the post. Sometimes it hurts how much Gunpla 101 is growing compared to Otaku Journalist. But this is what happens if you pick two topics and therefore make yourself doubly niche. Otaku Journalist will never be like a huge blog with a huge following. Gunpla 101 might. It's getting more and more gigantic all the time. So this is a real roundabout answer to your question. But I think what I'm trying to say is you do want to have a niche that you stick to, but you don't want it to be too small if you want to have a lot of readers. Like, making it about anime and journalism might not be the best idea if you're looking to be America's next top blogger or something. But if it were just about anime, that gives you a lot more room. Yeah, and then, of course, like, about the personality thing, like, I like to paint. I am really active in running, especially since sports anime. I'm not even kidding. I joined a running club after sports anime and started competitive running. And, like, this is stuff you, like, will never hear on Otaku Journalist. Well, I guess, like, very, like, the sports anime part you might hear about. But it's just, if you write about everything, your blog becomes about nothing. It becomes just, oh, a personal blog. And you just really need to think about who you're blogging for and what your blogging goal is. And if it's really for readers, it will stick to a niche. And if it's really for you, it will just cover whatever you're interested in at the moment.
Although I can think of a particular TV show that was expressly about nothing that did rather well.
Oh, that's true.
Kind of a follow-up question. I'm curious, I've seen kind of the same advice when it comes to running fan pages or Twitter accounts. And I'm kind of curious how you feel about that. I mean, it doesn't look like you split up your Twitter presence, or if you do, I'm not aware of it.
I really should. I have a Gunpla 101 account now, and I used to have an Otaku Journalist one, but I mean, Otaku Journalist is just me, and that's correct. I mean, if I look at my Twitter analytics, like 90% of my followers follow me for technology. They follow me for my day job. All this anime stuff is just confusing them and causing people to unfollow me. And I don't even care. Twitter's fun. I joined Twitter with the stupid name Lauren in Space when I was 21. It was on my 21st birthday that I joined. And I thought Twitter was just this fun little thing that me and my friends could do. I had 7 followers. And Twitter has become this, like, this corporate thing where I'm like, where it's like in my contract that I need to tweet about things for work. Though I usually use the work account. But, oh my god, I did the most embarrassing thing. I have all my accounts on TweetDeck, but for some reason I used the wrong account to retweet some dumb anime joke to readwrite.com's account. It was just Obama talking about anime. It was a joke about that. And then my boss is like, who put this up? This is really random. I'm like, I am the absolute worst. So, that's also a problem. I mean, if you divide up your Twitter account, you're really trying to keep your personality parts from leaking. That, be prepared to screw up sometimes.
Oh, yeah, I've definitely had that happen.
Yeah, but like, if I accidentally tweet this stuff to Gunpla 101, I don't think anyone would bat an eye. Gunpla 101 is a really helpful. It's a very it's a brand that really fits with my life because it's similar enough to what I already like that I'm not going to accidentally tweet something weird. Like, I don't know what I would tweet. Gunpla sucks or something. I don't know. I mean, that's just not going to happen. I mean, it really just depends what your goals are. because I don't want to tell people that there's one right way to blog, because I did just interview the bloggers behind 12 different blogs, and they're all like saying things that I totally disagree with. Like, some of them are like, never use Amazon affiliates. I make like $400 a month on Amazon affiliates. They're like, I've never made a cent on that. Go to Google AdSense, you'll make hundreds. I'm like, I've never even made a penny on Google AdSense. Just different things work for different people. So I think you should experiment. Like, I used to have an @otakujournalist Twitter that I used for just otaku journalist stuff. And that didn't work for my life, so I stopped doing it. I used to have columns that I no longer have on Otaku Journalist. I noticed that a lot when I interviewed people, that sometimes they would have columns, get rid of those columns, start new columns. Blogging is about, like, constantly reinventing and figuring out what works for you, what works for your readers. Any new thing you try could be that big thing that readers just latch onto and helps you make a name for yourself.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Since you mentioned it, you just said that there are columns that you did do that you used to maintain that don't anymore and so on. Is there something that you, like a type of column that you'd like to return to in the future, or?
Yeah, something I'm working on is like trying to put the journalism back in otaku journalism. I just gave away 3 free copies of my book to people who could recommend things that I should report on in the future, because lately I've been really getting back to my roots and writing about it, like doing actual journalism on the blog. Like, I interviewed a blind anime fan about how he watches anime, and especially what he thinks of Kill la Kill, because for me, half of it is that they're wearing these ridiculous costumes. And I interviewed a Wall Scroll distributor. In fact, the man who brought Wall Scrolls to America, why we have our anime posters on these fabric sheets with plastic tubes instead of on posters a lot of the time. And just basically, whenever I think of a question, like, what's Garugamesh Guy doing? I've been researching him and I found some insane stuff.
What is Garugamesh Guy doing?
Yeah, like, Garugamesh Guy is a professional actor. Okay, for anyone who doesn't, like, get this reference, I'm talking about the 2009 Sakura-Con commercial directed by Vic Mignogna and starring, actually, some pretty prominent names in, like, the anime community. And they're saying things like, I love sushi, I love Japan, Garugamesh! And it's just kind of dorky, and we can't believe it was on TV. And, I mean, Garugamesh Guy really steals the show, because he's, like, wearing Juggalo makeup or something. And I feel like that's tattooed on his face, because I've been finding other videos from his acting reel. And, like, whatever he's doing, at a party, in the water, going surfing, he's wearing that makeup. And I'm trying really hard to track him down if anyone has any leads.
That sounds amazing.
In your book, you did have interviews with 12 different people, like we've been talking about. And
technically 14, but 12 blogs.
Well, technically 14, yeah.
I was going to ask why 12, if there was a special significance, like you wanted to do a zodiac of interviews or something.
12 is my lucky number. It seems like a good number.
Fair enough. I should ask, though, if there was one question or one answer that really stood out to you, which one would you say people should pay particular attention to?
Are you trying to make me choose between my 12 children? No, I'm not doing this. I'm not doing this question, because I don't want to like single people out as like, well, this guy's way better than this girl or anything like that. I mean, there's something worth looking at in all the interviews. Whenever I'm interviewing as a journalist, either for my day job or for my blog or just for this book, I never finish an interview before I have like that click moment where something just clicks in my mind. I'm like, yes, this is the quote I was looking for, and now I can end the interview. I can keep going because I got momentum, or I can end the interview whenever because I have what I need. And I never end an interview before I get that moment where it's like, yes, that is super interesting. That is what I want people to know. That is the heart of this interview. I wrote about this in Otaku Journalism, actually, in the chapter on interviews. I don't even remember what chapter that is. I think chapter 4. Like, how to find that aha moment where you know the interview's over. But for now, I'll just be super vague, so you have to buy the book.
That was an interesting book. I really did adore the whole conversational style mixing with these, like, almost short story segments. What led you to go with that direction?
The fiction in Otaku Journalist?
Yeah.
Journalism? Yeah. All those all the fiction segments are named after my friends. They have nothing to do with my friends, but I just thought, I'll talk about a guy named Patrick who really screwed up in the ethics section, and that's named after the Patches, actually. Though, as far as I know, the Patches is a moral, upright, upstanding individual, and actually the ethical conundrum is based on my journalism career. I just like writing fiction. I thought it brought you more into the heads of young otaku journalists and saw what it was like. I just thought it made it more relatable when I'm giving all this advice to see how someone might implement the advice in the chapter in their life or in their career.
Absolutely. I really did like that approach. I felt it really adds something to that book. I'd love to see you approach it again if you get the chance.
Yeah, I'm taking a short story class right now, and actually my New Year's resolution is to write 10 short stories and publish them. I've written 3 of them, and I feel like they're all crap, but the name of the book is Fan Fiction, and they're all short stories about, like, just taking place at conventions. Like, one of them is about a snobby voice actor who gets attacked by a fan he made fun of with a gun. And another one is about a Comic Con that's been going on for 8 years and just how it's become their life.
Endless 8. I like it. How did you decide what to set the pricing at for your books?
Amazon has this thing where if I go below $2.99, I can no longer get 70% of the commission when the book is sold. So that's why Otaku Journalism is $2.99. The reason Build Your Anime Blog is $5.99 is because that's what I put Otaku Journalism at first. And Build Your Anime Blog is, like, way longer. So I thought, oh, it's, you're getting more bang for your buck here. And the reason I priced it at that was, well, I talked to a lot of people who self-published to be like, is this a realistic price? Is this a good idea? And eventually I'm like, well, if I sell a certain number at this price, then I can make back the money I invested. That's not a good answer. That's not how you should price a book. But pricing is really hard. Like, who am I to say my work is worth $6? I don't know. And I think about this because I have 2 book deals where I've written books with publishers, and I have nothing to do with how they price the book. So, like, let's see, how much is my book selling for? Like, one of my books is selling for £20 British. That's like $40, right? That's a lot of money. It's a hardback book about cosplay. I had nothing to do with the pricing, but somebody who is paid to do this said, okay, Lauren's book about cosplay is worth £20. And I also co-wrote a book about the Raspberry Pi, a tiny computer, and I see it as $9. Why is it $9? I don't know. But somebody said, okay, well, the book Lauren contributed to is $9. I'm a professional. Of course it is. I don't know.
It is kind of like magic, isn't it?
Yeah. But for me, I know if you price a book too low, people think it might not be worth their time. And if you price it too high, then people don't think it's worth their money, which makes sense. Like, ever since I changed Otaku Journalism to 299, I've been getting emails every now and then, like, Lauren, my only complaint is the price of the book is it's too cheap for all the advice you give. And I'm like, that's the nicest thing anyone's ever said, but I want it to be, like, affordable to students, which is why I kept it at $2.99 forever. Also, it's older now. And you can tell in the ethics section that was written before Gamergate. I should probably work on a second edition, like, for a post-Gamergate world, how you deal with journal ethics and journalism, which has become kind of a punchline now, but at the time it was just, I wrote it the way I had been taught ethics in school, and that is, journalism ethics is something that is changing all the time as, you know, as our society gets more acquainted with the internet, I guess. Yeah, so $5.99 because that's what Otaku Journalism was, and I don't think it's that expensive for what you're getting. Almost 200 pages. It'll probably go on sale in 3 months, but it'll never go below $2.99 because that's when Kindle starts to penalize me.
And speaking of, how is working with Amazon in regards to ebook releases? Just out of curiosity.
Well, you have to go to Amazon Author Central and set up an author page, and you go to KDP, what is it, kdp.amazon.com, which is Amazon Kindle Direct Publishing, and you just kind of upload a manuscript. It has to be in .mobi form. I use Calibre, which is a free program that I found on the internet that's good for Mac and PC to just take my Microsoft... Well, first it's Google Docs, then I put it into Microsoft Word, and then I put it into Calibre, and it converts it in like 2 seconds. Then I check it in Kindle Previewer, and when it's time to go up, it goes to kdp.amazon.com, and I upload the thing. So it takes 12 hours for Amazon to approve it and make sure I didn't just put up, I don't know, something horrible, or just a book of entirely commas, maybe. And then they take 30% and I take 70%. And that's nice. That's way more than I get while working with a publisher. I can tell you that self-publishing has been more lucrative than either of my book deals and probably any of my book deals in the future either.
I'm assuming you get an advance for the book deals. How long... does it take a long time for the self-published books, in your experience, to surpass what you get in advances?
Yeah, I guess it does. Okay, well, here's like how it is. Okay, everyone thinks that it's amazing if you get a book deal. Like, I feel like my family members were prouder of me when I got book deals than when I self-published, but it's just not sustainable. So, like, I get offered a job to write a book. I accept the job. I have to sign a contract. Let's say it's the cosplay book. I had to write that within 7 weeks. I invoiced the first part of my payment before I started writing, the second part after I finished writing, and then the third part just now. That was October when I was writing it. And just now, since it's published, was when I was allowed to get the third amount. So it doesn't take very long to catch up to the first two amounts. And also, I don't get any royalties when I work with a publisher. They just pay me something up front, and that's the end of it. And with books I self-publish, I can continue to get royalties as long as that book sells. If that book continues to sell, I continue to make money. If someone buys the cosplay book today, I don't make any money from that. I already saw the money that I'll get. And that is the difference between publishing a book by yourself and working with a publishing house.
Yeah, that makes sense. At least with a with like an upfront book deal, they're it's treated as a work for hire, right?
Yeah,
so
I would like
keep
to
everything.
I would like to point out that if you're famous, it'll probably be different, and you'll get royalties, and you can negotiate way more strongly. I mean, I've never gotten more than a 4-figure book deal, but I'm sure that it is completely different if you are a big name. Like, I have a friend, actually, you know, I live in D.C., so I know a lot of pundits. I have a friend who's a pundit for Fox News, no judging. He got a book deal with Ballantine, which is a book company I've actually heard of. I mean, the publishing houses I worked with were Carlton Limited and Maker Media. I don't know if anyone's even heard of those. But since he's a big name, since he's on TV, they gave him an advance for writing half of a book that was double what I got for writing an entire book. And I guess you could argue that I should have negotiated better, but I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that they wanted a book written by someone with a recognizable name. So if you're not famous, I say self-publishing's the way to go. I feel like we don't talk about this stuff, frankly. I like talking about money and stuff because I think it's... Well, I like transparency. I mean, as a journalist, I like revealing the truth to people. I always thought that once I got a book deal, my life would be complete and I would be a successful, famous author and everything's amazing, you know?
Does sound nice.
Yeah, but nothing has changed in my life. I am a few thousand dollars richer.
Do you have any... well, it's been 10 minutes. Do you have any ideas of your next book?
I did tell you about that fiction one. Maybe it's time to really devote myself to fan fiction, the book of short stories. I don't know if anyone would even be interested in that, but... And I don't even know if I'm a good fiction writer. You know, I majored in creative writing. That's my BA is in creative writing. But I've been professionally doing nonfiction writing ever since. And if you don't work a muscle, you lose it. So it could be all crap. But, I mean, I guess with self-publishing, it doesn't matter if it's crap. I can still put it up on Amazon. But I'm going to try really hard and not put it up until it's ready. But I don't know. If anyone listening has an idea for something they'd like to know about that falls into my expertise, I would like to write another nonfiction book, especially a journalism-heavy one, where I have to interview a bunch of people. What are you guys going to write books? I'm the one writing all the books. What are you? Get off your butts and write some books.
Well, I've been sitting on a few ideas about that. I just haven't had the time.
I'll stick to writing about anime, but...
Well...
Anime book. Got it.
I've been kicking around a few ideas, though. I've been thinking about, of all things, an anime 101 type thing, like the absolute basics of anime, because while anime is getting more accessible in this day and age, I still find that there is that barrier to entry, and the more we can do to lower that, the better we could be, I think.
I feel like it's more that there's a lot of landmines that you want to avoid before you become better inoculated.
That too. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, so that's my idea.
I think that has a lot of promise.
Mm.
Now set aside 2 months.
Yeah, that's the hard part. But yeah, I'll... You know what? How about this? We make a deal.
Mm-hmm.
I will have this done by the end of the year.
Okay. And I will have my short fiction done by the end of the year.
Deal.
Deal! We gotta do another podcast, check in, see what our colorful excuses for not doing it are, or miracle upon miracles, we actually did it. Wow, there was like a lot of anime during this anime podcast.
Yeah, but yeah, it worked out for the best. So, yeah. Honestly, I like when we go in this direction, though, because, like you said, it's kind of talking about the things that...
No, but it's cool because, yeah. Like, that's what I liked about interviewing everyone. They said I don't always get a chance to talk about this. Everyone just asks me about anime.
Exactly. It's a chance to really kind of stretch your legs a bit and talk about other fascinating things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It seemed like... through the interviews, there was a common theme of, top 10, top 30 lists being, like the most popular things on some sites. And, It almost seemed like the interviewee felt guilty about that. What are your feelings about list posts?
They're a good way to organize your thoughts. I don't like to overuse them. I don't use GIFs in my lists. I'm not very BuzzFeed. I guess I'm not cool anymore.
So you don't have a separate page for every entry in the list?
I mean, like, sometimes I use lists to organize my thoughts, like 7 questions to ask in order to write a helpful anime review. It also signals that you'll get 7 different pieces of advice. I don't know, lists are okay. That's really what the book is about. There are so many ways to get to success.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and you never really know what your most popular pieces are going to be. Like,
you just have to write them.
I know you mentioned a couple of times where, you know, you had a reasonable suspicion that it was going to be popular because that's what people were talking about. And that's actually seems like really good advice. But yeah, just from our experience too, Mike and mine, and I'm not sure about you, Anthony, the things that wind up being popular, sometimes it's like, huh?
Yeah, in the book I listed like my 5 top posts and why I think they did well. But I'm not going to give that away.
I did notice though that you did kind of touch on certain topics, like say SEO and things like gang setup and the like. But is there a publication that you would really refer people to, like if they want to, say, learn more about how to optimize for Google or something like that?
There's a lot of, like, free resources on ProBlogger about SEO and stuff. I mean, you could really go far down that SEO rabbit hole. I was looking into, like, optimizing Gunpla 101, and it got so, like, spammy and weird. I don't like that internet marketer stuff. Yeah. It really depends how far you want to go with things.
Fair enough.
I think there's maybe a handful of common sense things you can do, but otherwise I would agree. It's like you can really, really go crazy with that stuff. And at that point, it's like...
You need to think about who you're helping, too, because... I remember reading about, like, a way to make a website that does really well in Amazon affiliate sales, but it doesn't really help people. It's just you're accidentally tricking people. Accidentally. You're intentionally tricking people into clicking on things. And it just doesn't sit well with me. And it's like a 1-page site with a little bit of advice about choosing an HTML TV.
Yes. The infamous 1-pagers.
Yeah. Yeah, they do so well in the Google rankings, and I'm so mad.
Thankfully, Panda is knocking a lot of those down.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, hopefully one day I'll be to the point where content it really is king.
Yeah, and then there's the link jackers. Hey, here's this link. Look at my ads.
Yeah, it's been... Well, I don't know. I have Eskimet on my WordPress blog, so fortunately I don't have to deal with that very often. I just made a sale!
Woohoo!
That's what I like to see.
It reminds me of something a lot of tech companies do, and Facebook was kind of famous for it. They would have like an audible ding whenever a new person signed up for their service.
Oh yeah, I went into my company's headquarters in San Francisco. Not my company, like one of the companies I work for, ReadWrite. They have a gong that the salespeople hit whenever they make a sale. Oh, San Francisco.
It's kind of amusing for a while, I can imagine, but when you there's a very fine line there. Like if you start if you start getting even remotely successful, you're like, stop it. Just stop it.
I swear to God, if someone hits that gun one more time.
Another thing I noticed while going through your book was that it seemed like there were sort of two camps as far as scheduling blog posts or keeping up a schedule. Like some of them were very, I don't want to say anti keeping a schedule, but they were like, you know, we wind up having a regular postings, you know, but it's not like every Tuesday and Thursday. It's just, you know, a couple a week sometime. And then there's others that were like, no, I'm posting on Tuesday, even if I'm in the hospital. I found that interesting.
Yeah, I've been so bad with my schedule lately too, because, well, I don't know, I was working on the freaking book. I should have like gone on hiatus or something, but I didn't.
Yeah, that was one thing that I noticed as well, though. Like, it's kind of interesting to see how the various quirks in people do start to come out when you talk about things, especially not only scheduling but compensation. Like, I know there are some where there were people that are like, I would never even think about monetizing the blog and stuff like that, which really struck me as kind of fascinating.
Monetizing seemed to be a topic that nobody really wanted to talk about because it didn't, at least in several cases, it seemed like it didn't go that well for them.
It's very contentious, and making money is a very personal thing. Like, I like talking about it, but I don't know. My husband's always telling me I talk too much about money. Like, not like I'm too open about my finances. And I'm like, well, people should know. People probably think I'm rich and successful, and I'm not. And, yeah, but sometimes it's because it didn't work for them. Sometimes it's because it did work for them, and, like, they feel a little guilty about it. And sometimes it's because, like, making money just doesn't work with their goals. Like, I liked what Reverse Thieves said. Like, they're not interested in monetizing because they don't want to feel indebted to anyone, and they think that making money would, like, getting donations. I don't know. Elaine's comment was really funny. He's like, oh, got another dollar on the Patreon. Time to review Milky Holmes. And, like, just having to do things he didn't want to do. I really like affiliate linking because I don't feel required to write about anything. I just kind of subtly put in some affiliate links. Of course, they are disclosed. But for example, I affiliate linked to Build Your Anime Blog. So when people buy it off my site, I make a small commission. I make a commission off the book, and then I make like 40 cents when as an Amazon affiliate. I don't know why that's not illegal, but I checked. It's not.
Hey, you got to work the system sometimes, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's allowed. It is allowed.
What kind of country would this be if you couldn't get paid twice for one thing? Well, it's kind of like, well, no, I guess it's not the same thing. But, like, artists get royalties from their album sales, but then they also sell it themselves. But that's not really the same thing. Anyway, I'm going to shut up.
No, that's cool.
All right, for our last question, this is probably the most important one. Where can people get your book?
People can get my book in the Amazon Kindle store. Now, I've been asked, do I need to have a Kindle in order to get it? No, you absolutely don't. I don't even own a Kindle. All you need to do is download the free Kindle app for Windows, PC, for Windows, Linux, or iOS. You can also get it on a Windows phone, an Android phone, or an iOS phone. You can get it on any kind of tablet as well. I mean, they pretty much have it for anything. And you just buy the book and read it that way. And you can begin reading it immediately.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for coming to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Where can people find you online?
They can find me at otakujournalist.com and on Twitter at @LaurenInSpace.
All right. Cool. Well, thank you so much again for joining us. It was a pleasure.
Thanks, Mike. It was great to have you in the book. I mean, we should have talked about that more, but
yeah,
I'm hungry.
Maybe we can do another show. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Right. Yeah, we'll have to do one and see if we did our goals.
Definitely.
Our book goals.
Definitely.
Also, for my part, thank you very much for joining us, Lauren.
Thank you so much, Matt. That was Matt, right?
Yep, you got it.
Okay.
Yeah, dude, thank you for joining.
Thanks, Anthony.
All right, and that's our show. Thanks for joining us, everyone, and thanks to Lauren for joining us tonight. Till next time, I'm Mike Ferrer, signing off.
This is Anthony Simpson, sign our bye-bye.
This is Matt Brown. Peace out.
And remember to rate and subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher. It really helps us out. Have a great night, everybody.
Bye-bye.